Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View for Monday evening, March 19th. This is a pre-recorded interview, and I'm your humble host, PK, welcoming you back here at Third Stream View every Monday evening, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, 11:55 Eastern, on BBS Radio, Station 2. So, as always, I thank the suits in the office at BBS Radio for promoting free speech, free minds, and the great Western tradition of free inquiry. On this show, I talk about politics, economics, history, philosophy, war. I'm very critical of Zionism and Israel, and we talk about a lot of topics. This evening, I'm having a young friend of mine on, still a college student of an Indian background, of the that would be the East Indian background, which is humorously referred to as when you ask somebody if somebody's Indian today. I've heard it said dot or feather. Well, this would be, in this case, it would be dot for all you un-PC people out there. My young friend is a, I think he's a business student now, but he has a degree in telecommunications, all that sort of stuff. He's a fellow Ron Paul supporter, and it's interesting because his generation, as we know, they realize what they're faced with, the debt, the war, and all this crap that's being heaped upon them. So we're going to talk about those sort of things. And his name is Angad, A-N-G-A-D. And he is also sort of a newcomer to the Austrian School of Economics. And he went to a seminar I believe, early January. So he got more exposed to some Austrian School of Economics and some of the great teachers and intellectuals and authors of all this sort of stuff. And I think our friend is out there. Angad, are you out there?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Good. Welcome to Third Stream View. Would you care for some tea or coffee?
Sure, why not? Let's do it.
Well, it's self-service, kid. Anyway, the mighty PK is here, and we're ready to have a fun conversation and pick your brain a little bit. I know that sure. You're very, as you were in 08, you're a big fan of Ron Paul, and
yeah,
you're in that age group. You're a little post-college. You're, on the 20-year plan. No, you're still in school, but you're still part of that generation who is pretty much screwed by what's coming your way, the debt, the massive debt, want more of you young guys to go fight in their wars.
Yeah, I mean,
and the gloomy job outlook even for the educated folks. So where do you stand on this, my friend?
Yeah, I guess, you definitely, raised a good point about that. Although I am going back for my MBA, I mean, there has been kind of, plenty of frustration with regards to, what I've done in undergraduate. It just seems like, there's just kind of this big spin-off that, if you do go to college, for a four-year degree, that, you're guaranteed, a really good-paying job, which isn't really the case.
Not at all. So let me ask you, because we're anonymous here, what is your current college debt like? What are you faced with in, what's your outstanding debt right now, which I'm sure is lower probably than a lot of kids, but what are you looking at right now?
I guess roughly we're looking at about 17 or 18K overall.
Well, that's fairly manageable, especially if you have a job, but that's changing too, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you're going for education in one area, and then you're ending up having to do something in a different avenue, which you know, isn't really, you know, the point of going to a four-year college. It should be something that you can kind of do on a long-term basis. But, you know, with everything that's happened over the last few years, it's certainly been kind of a shake-up, you know, for my generation. And, you know, this is one example that one of my friends who's based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, ended up graduating with an engineering degree. And now he's pretty much stuck working a typical retail job as a manager. So, you know, where do you go even in that situation for somebody who's going, you know, for one of the top degrees out there?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, usually if you get an engineering degree, you're going to do pretty well. Although, like my grandpa told my cousin, you won't stay an engineer because most engineers go to get their MBA. Even your sister got an MBA, and you're working on one now, too. Which I think overall is a good thing, because if you understand business and you study business principles, you can do a lot of different things.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's definitely a lot of more, you know, opportunities that are presenting itself with the MBA program. And, you know, certainly if we can kind of eliminate some of the Keynesian way of thinking, you know, I think I will be able to utilize this MBA.
True. Now, by the way, what is your age as we speak? What is your age?
I'm currently 27 years old.
27. So you graduated at age 22?
About roughly, I think, 23. I had graduated in 2007 from, I had done my undergraduate from Penn State, currently doing the MBA through University of Easton.
And your undergraduate degree was in?
Communication.
Okay, now here's a question, and this isn't meant to be critical or anything, because you could ask this to anybody who's majored in anything later on in life. Okay, Angad, knowing what you know now, would you have varied your major, or what would you have done differently? For example, and you're a success. I'm just saying, when you look back, what might have you done differently? I know you're a good student. I'm not questioning how hard you study or hard you work. I understand all that, but when you look back, Angad, would you have made different changes in your educational pursuits? You know what I'm saying?
I think maybe you know, I would have done something kind of geared with you know, the business field, and you know, had some knowledge with the Austrian economics or the Mises Institute, I think that would have greatly helped me out at that point in time while I was studying an undergraduate. But certainly, I mean, you know, you look at a lot of you know, the examples. There's a situation with my uncle who's doing very well off. He didn't even have any you know, background with college at all. I think maybe he did take a few classes, but you know, he's doing very well for himself, you know, doing excellent overall. And, you know, I think maybe just seeing how people just tell you that that just basically, how am I trying to say this, that, you know, you're just kind of told, you know, right from the get-go that if you go to college, you're guaranteed a good job. And that's not necessarily the case, you know, because you're seeing that people who haven't even gone to college are making millions and millions of dollars. So where do we go from there, you know?
Yeah, well, there's some brilliant exceptions. My uncle was one. I was named after him, and he invented some equipment that rolled flat steel sheets, and he actually had MIT professors come out to meet him, I think in the 50s or 60s, to see, check out how he did this or what he did. So, of course, getting a formal education is a good thing, and there's, you know, great exceptions to the rule. But you have that background. Is it telecommunications you studied?
I'm actually communication, so more so towards the side of media.
Now, didn't that, when you studied that, I would assume, correct me if I'm wrong, that didn't that involve quite a bit of marketing too?
Yeah, there was you know, somewhat of marketing involved, but you know, primarily speaking, we just did a little bit more toward the side of media, and I'd kind of gone the route actually for you know, sports. I kind of wanted to
sure,
be a broadcaster, so that's kind of the route that I had ended up taking.
But your background in, again, is it telecommunications? Is that what you call it?
Actually, it's communication.
Sorry, communications.
A little different.
But it could still come in handy in the future, depending on what route you want to go. And that doesn't mean sport broadcasting, but I could see where it would mix well with your getting an MBA in business.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, definitely there's a lot of advantages of having kind of a communication degree along with doing an MBA. You're certainly right about that.
Yeah, and so I can see that it would benefit you. And by the way, can I pay you a compliment at this point?
Sure.
You have a much better radio voice than I do.
Thank you so much.
I don't have that great of a radio voice. I think my intellect and my message is quite good, and I'm glad that I was able to hip you to the Austrian School of Economics. And if you wouldn't mind, can you give us a couple more highlights of your experience with the Mises Circle meeting that you went to in early January?
Sure, absolutely. I mean,
in the Houston area?
Yeah, I had gone around January 14th, I believe it was. They had an event here, and from what I've understood from some of the members that have been there for many years, that it has been growing. This year they had almost over 500 people attending the event, and it was just kind of good to see overall. You know, it's also entertaining to listen to Tom Woods speak at the event, and you know, just kind of gaining an insight from him. He just seems like a very, you know, legitimate and honest and upfront individual.
You're right. He's, you know, he's one of my favorites. He's very well educated. I mean, in history, he knows his stuff. So when he, if he ever clashes with anybody like that idiot Mark Levin, the so-called great one, but actually G-R-A-T, like it grates on you, you know. Levin always resorts to name-calling, and he backs away from these, you know, debates that are on online or whatever. But Woods, and in addition to his subject matter, he's a brilliant historian. He really knows Austrian economics, although I wouldn't call him an economist per se. But he has a very sharp wit also, which makes it that much more fun because of some of the terminology he uses when he refers to his politicians and bureaucrats as these blockheads who've done this or that. I mean, some of the words he uses. So he's got that little zing that goes along with it, and that's what I like, that zing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the other thing that you, you know, get from that kind of event is that it seems like there's this kind of understanding that, you know, we need to stop inflating our money. We need to get away from that that Keynesian way of thinking where, you know, we're just inflating all these dollars, hoping that there is going to be, you know, some sort of resolution with the recession. But in actuality, it's just, you know, causing more problems.
I mean, how can they... It's just mind-boggling how they can get away with creating more money out of thin air and, you know, increasing the credit expansion. You know, it's like, okay, let's say this person has a heart attack and he falls on the street. Well, let's keep kicking him while he's down. You know, I mean, you at your tender age of 27, oh, to be young again, you get it. I get it. Bernanke doesn't get it.
Yeah. You know.
And this is a very secretive organization, the Fed. That's why it's great to see all you young people shouting, end the Fed. And as you know, Ron Paul's done more than anyone to bring the topic of Austrian economics to the forefront. And as you know, he mentions it. He speaks about it. And so that's a good thing. So, you know, guys like you, you're our future. So it's good that you are a proponent of the Austrian School of Economics. And I think that you understand, you know, probably a lot of the basics of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm kind of learning as I go here. And, you know, I think as with my uncle and then, you know, also some of my relatives have kind of, you know, introduced me to some of the philosophies of Ayn Rand. So, you know, gradually as I go along, that's definitely benefiting me, especially as I'm doing my MBA right now. You can definitely see that. I think the problem, though, is that, you know, what you find is that, you know, you have a lot of neocons and neoliberals that, you know, try to, you know, preach one thing, but, of course, it's something different. And, of course, Ron Paul, you know, does the exact opposite of that. And, you know, that's kind of where you see that, you know, some of the games that Gingrich and Santorum and Romney are all playing, they're just kind of, you know, in this kind of ploy, you know, to basically get Obama reelected, you know, for another election.
Well, it's going to happen. Obama, like I like to say, in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, Ron Paul is the only Republican who can beat Obama. Obama will be a shoo-in, even if it's a tight election. Romney can't beat him. Certainly Sanitarium can't beat him. And Gingrich, that slob, can't beat him. So they're going to bring it on themselves. However, a lot of the neocons and the powers that be, they can work with Obama because he's pro-war. And despite what the media says and this and that, he's very pro-Israel. He keeps supporting them. So, you know, it's just a facade. But one thing we don't need is more war and kids your age and younger getting shot up for no reason at all. When I can tell you for a fact, I'm sure that most of these jarheads and these young recruits, they don't know history. And until a few years ago, they couldn't find Afghanistan on a map or a globe.
Sure, absolutely.
And, you know, you weren't born in this country, so you're an immigrant with an Indian background. And as I've said before, humorously, you might find it amusing on God that I'm an American who actually knows world geography and world history. I could immediately point to India or Afghanistan on a map or the globe.
Sure.
Of course, yeah. History and geography being the lost subjects in America, which is why I love the saying that war is God's way of teaching Americans geography, as sad as that is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just kind of going back to your point about war, of course, we've known that the Democrats are having tensions with Iran now. And, you know, before, of course, it was Iraq and other places in the Middle East. But now they're moving towards Iran, which has nothing to do with, you know, anything in terms of war. Like, if you're looking at, you know, the whole situation of, you know, at the current moment, I mean, what has Iran done? Overall, I mean, they function very similar to the U.S. in terms of, you know, that they're very open, they're succeeding, they're doing very well. I think there was a video, too, on Daily Paul that I watched, which kind of, you know, outlined everything that's going on in Iran right now. And, you know, to just start, you know, an unmeaningful war, you know, in Iran when there's no evidence of, you know, any kind of, weapons of mass destruction or any kind of threat, why are we getting wrapped around this?
Because of a topic I'm not afraid to speak about. It's called global Zionism. It's called the Israeli lobby, and they're very powerful. They make or break elections here. They're, you know, they should be, AIPAC should be registered as a foreign entity. You know what AIPAC is? You've heard of AIPAC, right?
I've heard vaguely. Maybe you can give me a little bit more information about it.
Well, the opposite of vaguely is clearly. So I will clearly tell you that the real definition of AIPAC is American Israeli parasites against the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wouldn't be welcome to speak at an AIPAC convention, but I'd love to have 5 minutes with bulletproof shields around me and, you know, surrounded by security that wouldn't kill me. But that's what they want. The Israeli lobby wants the U.S. involved with them to attack Iran, a country who hasn't threatened anyone for centuries. I mean, Israel has 200 to 300 nukes. Now, if I don't even have a nuke or a military even near the size and strength of theirs, why am I going to pick a fight with them?
Sure, absolutely.
But they want to drag the U.S. into it and get kids like you and younger killed. And all these kids, and plus all this unemployment for the youth, so whatever a lot of them doing, they're joining the military. But they're not defending our rights. I used to think that they were, but all they're doing is supporting a globalist empire, which is further bankrupting our country.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is the way I like to debate things with people, because especially like pro-war conservatives, when they see our country's getting trashed, and even the big welfare state liberals, I mean, I say to them, well, what about the children and grandchildren? What are they going to have after all this debt? And that gets them thinking more, because it makes it more personalized.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
the sad thing is, the sad thing is, on God, I don't see it getting any better. I see it getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I mean, that's kind of a good point too. I mean, if we keep inflating the dollar, if we keep moving towards socialism in terms of draining the dollar and then introducing a new currency. Obviously, this is going to create a lot more problems, especially for our generation. So we need to be aware of these things so that we can correct it before, that bandage that the Keynesians are saying no longer works.
You mean, what do you mean, Angad? You mean introduce a new currency? A new currency backed by nothing? Just more paper?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, I don't know if you've heard at all about it, but just basically there is kind of a thing that they've mentioned about the Amero being introduced, which would kind of make it borderless between Mexico and Canada. And why are we moving towards that? I mean, we're giving up our rights by doing something like that, and I don't think it's a feasible situation.
You mean like the Amero and the North American Union?
Yeah.
Well, I would prefer when no one loses their sovereignty and there's a sound currency backed by, commodity like gold and silver, and we have complete free trade and goodwill and travel with each other. But I still want Mexico to have their sovereignty in the U.S. and Canada. And I, of course, am opposed to all world government and all attempts at world government.
Certainly. I mean, it's just like putting a thumb under, our finger and just say, you're going to do this. And if you don't, agree with it, then there will be consequences for your action. And, of course, they're implementing these things so slowly but surely, through passing different laws. And, people do not see it. I mean, it's just almost like being a blind sheep.
Well, the sheeple, they're not even blind, they're sheeple. Americans have a lot of fear, and, the initial revolution against Britain was done against much smaller taxation and government than we have now. So I'm not optimistic about the future, and Obama is the black Bush, and Romney's the white Obama. Obama's just carried the Bush policies further with more of a silver tongue.
Yeah, I think actually... I heard one of my relatives use kind of a nice joke towards Romney, saying that he is kind of like a used car salesman, which is definitely true. I mean, how much more deceptive can that guy be?
Well, no offense to used car salesmen, but I describe Romney as an oily, stuffed shirt used car salesman. Pro-war, pro-drug war, pro-Israel lobby, I'm not down on his wealth per se, but I will say this, that his father, the former governor of Michigan, was a much better man than him.
Mm-hmm.
And you haven't heard it put that way. But that's why I like to – I have the freedom on this station to speak my mind and is with my guests. And unlike talk radio, even if you were an opponent, I wouldn't chop you off and say, oh, I can't discuss this anymore, because I'm looking forward. I haven't really clashed with anyone yet. But that's what I want to do. I want to clash with speaking with friends like you, folks like you. Not that it isn't a challenge. It's not merely meant to be a challenge, but, and I don't want to preach to the choir because we're pretty much on the same page.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there's a certain crowd that I want to go off to after is the liberals and the neocons, especially neocons. I can even talk sense to some liberals. Quite a few liberals agree with me on the as I like to say, the supremacy of capitalism, which does not mean bailouts, corporate welfare, crony capitalism, a real free market. A lot of them agree on that. I'm not that I'm surprised, but they seem to know that, yes, that is the honest way of economics and a competitive system, not this awful crony capitalism and the bailouts. And, it's just awful. And, of course, you got, Sachs, what's the banking? What's the big?
Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, Goldman Sachs. Financing both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very Zionistic, as is the Federal Reserve. So there's a very powerful Zionistic entity, and this is not about. Mine is always an expose on power. This is not about advocating harm to Jewish Zionists because they're in league with the Bush Rockefeller wing. They're not fighting each other. They're not killing each other. They're on the same page. They're globalists, and they pursue, capitalism only when it serves their interests. But they like that. They're on the taxpayer gravy train, especially the military-industrial complex.
Sure. Kind of going back on this topic about war, and
yeah.
Of course, Dr. Paul has preached heavily against it. I mean, with that being said, I mean, look at how much support that he has overall with the military. I mean, he has the most support from the military than, you know, any of the other candidates that are out there. So there has to be something right, you know, from that.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's absolutely no reason to attack Iran, and the blowback will be awful in the long run. The stuff that this is going to stir up, and the implications, further implications of reprisals, payback, you know, blowback. In fact, do you know what Iran stands for?
No. What is it?
Israel requires American naivety. And Americans are waking up. They're starting to realize this whole mess with Israel. Because as I'm proud and always, I say it almost every show, is that Israel is not our 51st state. And nowhere in the U.S. Constitution does it require American taxpayers to continuously provide Israel with foreign aid and an endless supply of free American-made murder weapons.
Yeah, absolutely.
And America had no enemies in the Middle East prior to 1948 when Israel was violently imposed upon Palestine. The Rothschild-backed Zionists, who are atheistic, you know, kicked the Palestinians off their land, took their land, and proclaimed, you know, God gave us this land, shouted the atheist Zionist Jews. Well, if you're an atheist Jew, how does God give you the land?
Yep.
You know, so, yeah, I mean, and of course, in the major media, as far as war, you know, any criticism of Israel is Jewish power or the Israeli lobby, you're automatically labeled anti-Semitic. Mm-hmm. You know, so to me, that's water off a duck's back. I'm impervious to those claims. I like to say, oh, really? Well, you know, I prefer the modern definition of anti-Semite, which is a person that Jews don't like. But yes, this war thing distorts the market economy and allocating of resources, so much waste more into the war machine. It's just awful. Is this an unending thing with America? More wars?
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like a waste. I mean, you know, it just seems... overall, we're starting all these countless wars for what reason? You know, kind of going back to that example, as you said, that we were friends with the Middle East. Of course, you can give an example with, you know, Donald Rumsfeld, who was very much, you know, in touch with Saddam Hussein and, you know, had basically formed kind of an allegiance or alliance with him quite some time back. And basically, you know, you switch gears to the present moment and, what has changed since that point in time? I think even there was a story about how Saddam Hussein was given the key to, I believe it was Detroit, you know, for his efforts, you know, in the Middle East at the time, I guess, when tensions were kind of brewing with Russia.
I hadn't heard that, but possibly is true. But look at Saddam. Saddam was not a nice guy, but he did fight against He fought against fundamentalism for, you know, over 30 years or 40 years. And when Bush, the neocon bastard, and his neocon buddies, Wolfowitz, Richard Pearl, Rumsfeld, you know, all of which I think should be tried and executed. But what did Bush do? He destroyed the small Christian community in Iraq, the small Jewish community in Iraq, caused the plight of millions of refugees. And like in 91, these idiots, the federal government and their military, they destroyed water treatment plants, sewage treatment plants, power plants. So this is the mess that has gone down there. And sadly, most Americans still, they don't get it.
Yeah, I think there's this kind of sensationalism that you know, is always drawn by the mainstream media. Which kind of gets people riled up, and they think that, you know, they have to go and start wars with other countries, which is just unjust. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not a thing that's, in today's time, you know, the right thing to do. Why should we be starting unjust wars? It's not fair. You know, how can we create, you know, this free market if we're always fighting and causing tension with other countries.
You're right, and your thinking is sound because I say it is. So you need to continue doing well in school and trying to get the best jobs you can, and also continue to study Austrian School of Economics and, you know, spread the word amongst your friends, gently. But your generation gets it. Ron Paul rallies are flocked by thousands show up. Romney, Gingrich, and Sanitarium, they can't draw those types of crowds. And it's our young people are our investment in the future. So Ron Paul has them. And they realize what's going on, these kids. They see it, as you do. So, it's just so sad. I don't see the job market. I don't see it getting much better as far as the better jobs. So by the time you get out of school maybe and work a couple years more at jobs you're not thrilled about, maybe it'll pick up. But Obama's going down the wrong path for everything. It's already been shown to us that Keynesianism doesn't work. If you look at FDR's tragic record of spending more, and then, of course, starting wars.
Absolutely. No,
but this country's
right
already
that.
Broke. How are we going to start more wars? I say to pro-war conservatives, you want more war? Do you want to borrow more from China? They can't answer. They don't like it. Well, you know, where do they get a lot of their marching orders? And that's why I like to, and they don't like this, but I like to say to them, thank goodness I never let neoconservative talk radio and Fox News do my thinking for me, because talk radio is all neocon, Fox News, even CNN, the major networks are pro-war, they're pro-regime, and you have the CIA heavily involved in the media and universities, and of course, overthrowing foreign governments. That's what they do, and of course, they lie and they're in denial about it, but the CIA, the Mossad, and Britain's MI6, they are the masters of deception, my friend.
Absolutely. I mean, it's almost like creating this Hollywood theme with CNN or Fox, or as
of
I
course.
Refer to Fox as dumb Fox News. They like to sensationalize and create something that's not there. I think there's also another example. If you go on LewRockwell.com, by Alan Stable, had a nice article about this. I don't know if you've been following with this YouTube sensation about the Kony 2012. And basically, I mean, it goes kind of on that line that you're referring to about the neocons and neoliberals that are, kind of starting these unjust wars.
It's the same foreign policy, because it's the one government head, sorry, the one government party with two heads, or the one bird of prey with two wings. So the Republicans and Democrats, basically we agree on everything except how much to spend. They're both war parties, especially Republicans. But the Democrats are right along. Look what a hawk that Hillary Clinton is.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's coming from both sides of the party. I mean, have with the Bushes, of course, carrying out what they had to do in Iraq and the Middle East. And now you have the same thing repeating itself now with Obama threatening to go to war with Iran, and there's absolutely no need. If people would educate themselves and do a little bit of research on their own, they would see that Iran's completely harmless, and we have nothing to worry about with them. But, the media, as you said, the Fox and CNN, the major media outlets, always want to, pinpoint and make Iran to look like the bad guy, the big bad wolf, and that's not necessarily the case, but, people are comfortable with just being fed, manure.
Well, yeah, and I wasn't going to tell you about Iran. I lost my thought there, but yeah, you're right, and this whole thing is ridiculous. I don't see how they can even entertain it, because this country's broke. But, the Obamas, the Bushes, the military industrial complex, all the big shots, they retire with millions of dollars or fat pensions in their speaking engagements. So what do they have to worry about? It's the grunts. It's the, and who's doing all the fighting? It's the poor whites or the unemployed whites and the blacks and the Latins. That's who's doing all the fighting and getting killed.
Oh, yeah, certainly. And, that's kind of a good point that you had kind of brought up here, too, with the minorities kind of helping out in the military and the poor whites as well.
Oh, yeah.
But there has also been this issue that has come up by the mainstream media. I think CNN kind of made a spin about it, with Dr. Paul being, you know, a racist, which he has denied, of course. And, you know, why would Dr. Paul, a person who stands for freedom and the rights of each and every individual, be a racist? That's what I want to ask.
Well, what kind of racist wants to end the racist drug war and stop the wars which continue to kill darker-skinned people on the other side of the world?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, the one thing, too, I mean, Dr. Paul wants to see more rights for blacks and other individuals in this country. He's preached the exact opposite of, you know, as you say, for Santorum and Gingrich and Romney and Obama are. I mean, what have they done to benefit minorities? If anybody has been representing the rights towards other individuals, to other minorities, it has been Dr. Paul. Certainly
well,
has been.
I don't think, or I hope you don't mean, not extra rights for minorities. I mean, pretty much equal rights for everyone, but not the persecution of minorities, more so because of the injustices of the drug war.
Sure, absolutely.
Now, let's talk about a different kind of racism here briefly that you don't hear much about, and it's a concept called Jewish supremacism. Here's an ugly quote from Rabbi Yaakov Perin in 1994. 1 million Arabs are not worth a Jewish fingernail. It's shocking when you see, because most people aren't into looking into it, but there has been much, there are many quotes of awful things said by Jewish intellectuals, authors, and or rabbis. You know, they talk about the imams. Rabbis have said awful things too. Here's a quote from a Israeli woman who has a radio show, the wife of a prime minister, vice prime minister, demands suffering bombing of Gaza civilians. She said on her radio show, I hope that, let's see, I hope that at tomorrow's cabinet meeting, a decision will be accepted to enter Gaza and kill all those responsible for the nightmare that is happening in the south. It's time even for the passive residents of Gaza to suffer the way the residents of the south are suffering. Now, I don't believe that, you know, Gaza should fire any missiles into Israel. I'm opposed to that. But a lot of those missiles are very, you know, they're tiny. They haven't, wreaked much destruction. But, you know, that poor section of Israel, their back's against the wall. It's a big ghetto. Because Israel, in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, is a terrorist apartheid state. And these people have nothing else. That, you know, their back's against the wall. Even the flotillas that came to help them out, Israel tried to thwart those. So it's really sad what's going on. And once again, of course, as a disclaimer, I like to say, is that all objective, intellectual, scholarly criticism of Israel, Zionism, and or Jewish power is automatically labeled anti-Semitism, which is how I would start any debate. I would give that disclaimer.
Yeah, certainly.
You know, so in all this demonization of Islam, where was this before 1948? You know, the Quran's been around for centuries. All this stuff, we weren't hearing about this years ago, but ever since the U.S. bailed out Israel and held its hand and gave it free weapons and support, well, this is what happens.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, it just seems like if it's not one area, it's, you know, if it's not one country, it's another place. So when will we kind of get out of that mentality where we're always thinking of survival of the fittest? And why don't we start thinking of being, you know, in those terms, survival of the wisest, you know?
Well, it's just awful. And, you know, Ron Paul, I'm much more blunt about Israel. Ron Paul, you know, he wants to cut off foreign aid to everybody, which I understand, and he wants Israel to be able to make its own, you know, its own decisions and do what it has to do. Well, fine. But however, you know, truth be told, a lot of Israelis do not want war with Iran. It's being pushed on them by their idiots in government and all their neocons. That right-wing Likud party is run by a bunch of similar to Bush and Cheney's, you know, and they're in league with Republicans here. So, you know, this isn't about religion. Yeah, this isn't about religion. This is about property, actually. And as I like to say, the Palestinians would be just as pissed off if they were invaded and kicked off their land by Chinese, Peruvians, or Martians. But you won't hear this in the major media because the major media is very pro-Israel and pro-Zionist. Well, hey, I could care less about Israel. I'm anti-Israel and I'm anti-Zionist, which is not the same thing as anti-Semitic or being anti-Jewish. But I'm an America firster. I don't care about Israel. I'm an America firster, you know, and that's what I like to bluntly throw out these pro-Israel conservatives and whatnot. I say, hey, I'm an America firster, and like I mentioned earlier, Israel's not our 51st state, you know, so I don't want to be involved with them. If you want to give them money or fight for them, go ahead, but I don't want to, you know, and so they find that difficult to deal with.
Certainly.
You know, so, you know, I don't know what to tell you as far as this just has to end. This is where the problem stems from. And until the masses wake up and realize that it's our support of Israel and propping up Muslim dictators throughout the decades, that has been the problem. But here's the thing. Europe gets it. Even the British get a lot of it. The rest of the world gets it. They really get it, more so than Americans. But Americans are starting to wake up.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, I mean, you know, slowly but surely, people are waking up to this. You know, and it just kind of goes back to that point about starting wars with countries unjustly. Why are we in countries that we have no reason to be in? There has to be something else going on which is pushing us towards there. And, of course, it comes back to resources and the situation that we're in terms of oil. And starting these wars with countries, you know, that have the resources to provide for oil.
Well, that might be true, but can't we get oil without going to war? Can't we just sign contracts like China's doing?
Absolutely. Why can't we do things diplomatically like we did before? Why are we going this route? And in one token, these wars are causing us to get bankrupt back home. We're losing our you know, military to these wars when we should be looking towards you know, the safety of them. And you know, just basically, we're not kind of in that mentality. We always want to, you know, be the big bad wolf and kind of go after every country's resources, and that doesn't always work that way. You have to do things in a diplomatic way. And, of course, look how things have been successful for China in the recent years.
True. Plus, you know, the U.S. is trying to kick China out of the Middle East and out of Libya and all these countries. It just amazes me that the federal government would pick a fight with China or cause China grief when China is our banker. And, you know, I don't agree with their government. I don't like Marxism. But
sure,
for the people of China, they're much better off now than they were before. You know, it's much better for the people. One of China's biggest problems is pollution. And this one-child policy is going to come back and bite them because of the inequalities it's caused, if that's the right word, in male-to-female ratios.
Yeah, certainly, that's absolutely right. And kind of going back to that point, why it's essential that we have somebody like Dr. Paul in an office is because right now what we're being, you know, faced against with China is that we have communism over there versus the crony capitalism. And how can we say to our future generation, to our kids, to our family that, you know, capitalism works when, you know, there's so many cronies in it?
Well, that's true. And like I like to say, as I understand it, it's almost easier to open a business in China than it is here. So what's it going to take? Is it going to take a Marxist government in America to impose a free market economy on the country? You know, so there is a little humor in all this stuff, but it's just something to be aware of. And, you know, we're going to pick a fight with China. Well, they got nuclear weapons. I mean, why is the U.S. Fifth Fleet over there dicking around in, you know, the South China Sea or off of China? That's their part of the world, you know. But the mentality of so many Americans, they think America is supposed to be the world's policeman. Did they think it was all hunky-dory on September 10th? That everything was fine? Did they not realize all the interventions going on and propping up dictators and all the CIA involvement? I guess not. Because I myself said on the morning of 9/11, after I saw that the planes hit the towers, I said, well, the chickens have come home to roost. So Reverend Wright wasn't the only one to say that. I said it that day, and what I meant by that was, hello, U.S. foreign policies come back to haunt us. What the federal government has done is come back to haunt us. You agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so consequently, and what the Federal Reserve has done by destroying the country and, you know, destroying the value of the money and causing the housing crisis, it's made, you know, a lot of people's lives more difficult, including yours, our young people. Your job opportunities are not what they were. You know, so the best you can do is just hang in there and keep educating yourself and studying Austrian economics and realizing that the media is a lot of BS. For example, Fox News. We deceive, you believe.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely true. I mean, again, it's all the major media outlets that are, you know, involved with it.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you. So let's say that the economy picked up and the job market was looking better, and let's say you've got your master's. What sort of things interest you, would interest you job wise down the road? What do you?
You know, I think you know, something maybe involved you know, in the role of finance and management. Certainly, if I can you know, utilize my MBA degree for that, that would definitely be beneficial. But certainly not just going through the whole concept of the Keynesian way of thinking, because that's what got us into this problem the first time. So of course, there would be, you know, different avenues that I would pursue. Maybe, you know, you had mentioned before about investing in gold and, you know, other resources.
Sure.
You know, which are kind of beneficial.
I still thought that you'd also make a good college professor.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, the biggest thing, too, about that is, you know, teaching is a great avenue to go through. But again, you know, it goes back to this thing about getting your PhD, and so many people have done their PhDs and they're sitting, you know, basically jobless, all that education for what reason? And, you know, they're sitting with almost 40, 50, 60 K and, no job. So where's the recognition with that too? So it's a great field to be involved with, but certainly, you know, you have to consider some of those factors as well.
True, true. So, you would like to be in the finance world. Now, are you taking a, when you get your master's, does that involve a lot of finance classes too?
Yeah, I actually have not started the finance courses at the present moment. I've kind of done more so along the lines of, you know, classes in terms of ethics and management. But gradually, towards the time that I do finish my MBA, I will be kind of acclimated towards the finance side.
Well, that's good, because plus you've always done pretty well in math too, haven't you?
Yeah, for the most part. I guess not as, you know, this is kind of a joke here, but, you know, many Indians are, you know, far more superior that way. But, yeah, certainly I'm pretty decent overall.
Well, that's good. But living in Texas, I'm sure you get spoken to in Spanish a lot, don't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think there's kind of, you know, misconception there, but I guess it's kind of easy. You know, I have a lot of Hispanic friends too, of course, and you know, it's kind of easy to be thought, you know, in those terms that you are Hispanic.
Well, I have a friend who's got a Persian background. For a few Americans out there who don't know what Persia is, that was the former title for Iran. But he gets spoken to in Spanish a lot too, so we kid around about it, but it's kind of funny. But No, so you have that Indian background, and which to me means, because I'm actually an American who actually knows about other cultures and people, is that especially the Indian immigrants in this country, well-educated, good family structures, usually sound employment, good jobs. So, you know, that's something to be proud of. And I was saying earlier in the show something about someone used to say, is it dot Indian? This person's Indian, dot or feather?
Yeah, well, I get that quite a bit too.
Well, I'll tell you what, the dots are doing much more than the feathers, because the feathers were screwed by the federal government, put on reservations, given welfare, high suicide rates, alcoholism, drug abuse. You know, now the Indians have a lot of casinos and whatnot, but, you know, those are some of the poorest places, and the worst places in America was Indian reservations.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you talk about First Nations being affected that way. I mean, you know, basically no rights. We're still basically kind of brushing them under the rug. And, you know, that's got to change, of course. And, you know, I certainly feel for, you know, Native Americans for all the kind of oppression that they've dealt with. And, of course, I mean, not to take anything away from, you know, the Holocaust that happened. There was a Holocaust in America before, too, with the Native Americans.
Oh, no, we can – no, don't say that. That's anti-Semitic. There's only the Jewish Holocaust. Only that one matters, not the Russian Holocaust or the Armenian Holocaust or the Cambodian Holocaust or probably the worst, the Chinese deaths.
Yeah, I mean, all over. I mean, who hasn't been affected? And, I mean, even here, it's been kind of prevalent during the wars, too. Look how the Japanese were treated, and you look at the situation before that with the Native Americans.
True, true, of course. Well, I get it, you know, so, and I'm not afraid to say so, but because I don't care about any this, you know, accusations of anti-Semitism, I'm, you know, I can deal with that crap, but, you know, only Jewish suffering is special. BS. There's been a lot of different Holocausts in larger numbers. So, you know, that's how I view things. But anyway, I would like to say that the show is coming to an end here. And I really appreciate you coming on. I hope you felt comfortable. Didn't it feel like just when we speak on the phone?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was you know, nice to get on the air here for a little bit. So certainly.
Yeah, you're with the mighty PK here. You know, and my thing is, I like to, depending on what the topic is, I like to cut to the chase and offer solutions too.
Sure,
so absolutely. I'm glad you came on. It's a very comfortable hang, and I appreciate you coming on, my friend Angad. I hope that you'll continue to do well in school and that you get a job, you know, a really good job that you would like to have in the future, or become an entrepreneur, any of those things. But, you know, we got to get this economy under control, because our young people like yourself are just going to be continue struggling needlessly in a situation that they did not create.
Sure, absolutely.
So keep on supporting Ron Paul. Do whatever you can. Go to those libertarian or those Mises meetings, which is always good to know and expand your knowledge. So with that, my friend, I'm going to thank you again for coming on to this pre-recorded episode of Third Stream View. And Third Stream View is on every Monday evening on bbsradio.com, station 2, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, and 11:55 Eastern. So until next week, good night, everyone.